Medic one inbound to your facility. Emergency traffic on a 45-year-old male in cardiac arrest. Following multiple gunshot wounds. CPR in progress. Patient intubation. IO in place. Stay with you in 5 minutes.
Welcome to the EMS Handoff, your source for all things EMS. And now, let's welcome to the show your hosts, Bradley Dean, Eric McCullough, and David Blevins.
Hello, and welcome to the EMS Handoff Podcast. This is David, and along with my co-host, Eric McCullough, and Bradley Dean, we are your source for all things EMS. It's just us. So as we say every week, the distinguished guest is out. It's just us. You got Eric, you got Bradley, and you got us for the next hour. But, get to have a little bit of fun. So let's start off talking to each other like we normally do, and let's see how it is. As this episode is coming out, we will all be getting together in Middle Tennessee. It's going to be fun. We're going to see a couple things happening from you there. So Bradley Dean, looking forward to coming over to Murfreesboro.
Yes, I will leave sometime Tuesday evening, Tuesday night, and get to you sometime on Wednesday. It takes forever. I've got to go to the other side of the world and back.
Just the other side of the mountain. That's all it really is. You know, it's kind of funny. Anytime I go over to North Carolina, the only thing that is I just don't want to hit those ones in the middle of the night and try to come through there. I don't know why. It's good to handle the rest of the drive, just that one spot. So, well, you're going to be traveling over Tuesday night to the that's already in that area. Eric McCullough, how's Middle Tennessee ready to hold us down?
No, it's going to be good, man. Yeah, they're like 3 miles away from me. It's really nice. Whereas the old days where we would go to Memphis, which I always thought that was a bad drive, but then I started thinking about everybody in East Tennessee and how terrible of a drive that was. That was like six hours, wasn't it? Like 3 hours to Middle Tennessee, then another 3 hours to Memphis.
Something like that. Yeah.
It was an absurd amount of time.
Yes. Yeah. So that is one nice thing about this conference being in Middle Tennessee for so long. But the one problem about it not traveling is every third year, we didn't have to leave anywhere. So it is there. So we're looking forward to coming live to a couple episodes. We'll have to see what all it brings us. So, all right. Before we introduce ourselves this evening and our topic, we'd like to thank our podcast partner, the Journal of Emergency Medical Services. They've been a tremendous partner to the EMS Handoff Podcast. And while we remain your source for all things EMS and the podcast verse, GEMS has been an industry leader for many years. Make sure to go by their website at GEMS.com and see their efforts to keep the industry informed. Also, you get to see all of our back episodes as well as the podcast partners that we have out there as well. We like to shoot out a couple of shout outs to them, a couple of great industry leaders through the different podcasts as well. Don't forget to go to their different podcast platforms and find EMS Today on Apple's Spotify and Google. Additionally, we would like to thank our apparel line and invite you to go visit the Pursuit Company to see the EMS Handoff Podcast line of our Keep Back Podcast shirt that's available, as well as our original logoed. We have short sleeve, long sleeve shirts, as well as hoodies. You can find them at thepursuitco.com and look to find all that great apparel. I know Eric says it's workout worthy and just great looking, stylish. You can wear it anywhere. So make sure and visit thepursuitco.com and find all of our EMS handoff gear. We'll be supplying us with some of our shirts for giveaways at the conference in Murfreesboro this year. So Bradley, you've been researching a topic and realize that podcasters out there have not really taken this up. It's been really relatively sheltered, I guess you could say, but we're going to go ahead and have the conversation. So introduce the topic.
So about 18 months ago, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration released a document called the Agenda 2050. I was going to say, hey, a couple of centuries from now.
You're getting ambitious.
Yes. But so we really haven't talked about, you know, what will EMS look like in the future? You know, we've talked about lots of futuristic things. We see lots of TV shows. And I think with the pandemic, we're going to see a lot of different things come out of what EMS does. But let's talk a little bit about the EMS agenda for 2050.
So we kind of go back and we look back in the late 90s and we take a look at the EMS agenda of the future, the EMS education agenda for the future, research agenda, and all those really pretty much had a 10-year timeline on them, at least we're supposed to. And we take a look at where those were to go, and some of the marks had gotten hit, some of them did not. And so once we got to that point, you know, 10 years in any profession, especially one that is relatively on its infancy, kind of how we are, changes quite a bit in that decade range. So you take a look at where we've got to another 14 years really after that, and we have the 2050. So give us, Bradley, kind of your synopsis. What does this document entail?
So this document has, you know, lots of things in it, but the whole thing is it's the goal exactly, but basically to create a vision of what EMS could be. And that was the whole document. So, you know, as we look at this, if we wanted to step back and you think about people that are retiring now or just before they retired, let me ask you guys, where were you in 1986? What do you remember from 1986?
You don't want to ask me that question.
Yes, we do.
So, because I was 2 years old.
I've got you by 5 years on that one, Eric. So I was okay. Seven.
All right.
So I was entering the K-12 system and just starting that journey.
Yeah.
Okay. So did you know that the first cell phones just came out then?
In the 80s or cell
phones? Late 80s, the first cell phones, they were huge. They were big bag phones, just came out, and they cost about $4,000 each, which would be equivalent to about $10,000 to $11,000 today.
All right.
So even before the bag phones, when they came out, they were only in the vehicle because the only way they could actually be transported was to have the module in the trunk with the phone actually in front. And in those vehicles, they were only in very high-end vehicles, and that put them into another price point altogether. So I did not know about it at that time. Mm-hmm. Later on, as I got into the technology industry, I kind of found out the retroverse. And what's actually interesting is when you go back and look at some of the advertisements from the late 80s, early 90s, when the bag phones came about, that were actually quite hysterical.
So as another point, did you know that only about 10% of Americans had a personal computer then?
So in the 80s.
In the 80s. No.
Yeah. So
they were huge.
My dad would bring home his laptop from the Marine Corps. And this thing had a full size keyboard that came down and a little about 7-inch green screen with 2 5-1/4-inch floppy disks. Now you're taking back to the war games conversation. Mm-hmm. and a Whopper, war operations planning and response, the supercomputer of the days that our calculators have more computing power now than they do. So
yeah. And we didn't even have remote controls for TVs then.
Nope. Well, no, we did. It was people like me and soon to be Eric that had to go over there and change mm-hmm. the channel.
Yeah.
But you didn't really have to because there wasn't that many stations.
Mm-mm. All right. So I took us backwards about 3 decades. What did EMS look like then? What did EMS look like then?
So you were just getting out of the realm of still some, if I remember my history right, still really getting out of the history of the funeral homes, going over to ambulances, the old Ghostbusters looking Cadillacs and stuff running the calls, and not much, just really getting into care in the back. And I could be wrong on my slider just a little bit.
Yeah. So maybe just a little bit more advanced than that. Yeah. So EMS in 86 really looked a lot like it does today. We've adapted technology. We've adapted a lot of things and put them in the back of our trucks. We teach differently. And we access systems differently, but it still looks a lot today like it did in 86. And why is that?
Well, that seems a little backwards, you know, like we're talking about floppy disks and cell phones in the bags and all that. And it's crazy to think like we have migrated technology, but we haven't really migrated our purpose. And I think we're trying to do that. I just feel like every single time we do that, as an organization, we either one cannot come together as an organization to get any further than that, or two, the progress is so stagnated that any motivation or inertia that gets behind it is easily quelled either by time or opposition legally, or through other outside vendors or outside agencies that are preventing us from, I don't know, improving our care standards, schooling standards, or anything like that. Because you're right, like we haven't changed that much. Even I entered EMS back in 2002, and I don't want this to become an old, like, you know, oh, this back in my day. Because I mean, back my day is the same as everybody else's day. The only difference is now we just now got the technology back at one of the services I was working for part time to transmit EKGs, which, by the way, on the show Emergency, you could do back in the, I guess that was the 80s or 70s, or was it 80s?
Yeah.
Okay.
Late 70s.
So technology's
changed, but you know what we do, how we deliver it, and how we're reimbursed really hasn't changed. Now you've got some pockets where places have changed, and they're doing some really neat things with the ET3 and everything else, but we're still reimbursed off of a transport model.
And a lot of our education, not towards our providers, and that's one of the interesting spots, but to a lot of the individuals that are outside that support legislators, city, county leadership, and the community themselves, you know, tend to believe if we don't get to the hospital, you don't get care. Because of that philosophy, it's like we get in the back of the ambulance, we can go, because you take a look and a lot of places are having conversations about, well, I just called an Uber, or I, you know, because I'd get the transport, it doesn't cost as much. And so even that education to those decision makers, or even the community that leads those decision makers, they don't necessarily know what all we do in the back.
No, and we've come a long way with technology, with AEDs, the ability to transmit, the computers we use. We now have healthcare data link up systems, or what, you know, some people call health data exchange, where what we put into the system links to the hospital chart if we scan it at the hospital, which, by the way, if you work for an EMS service and you're not getting hospital outcomes back, talk to your administration, talk to your EHR vendor. They can make it happen. There might be a cost, but that is valuable data that comes back to your providers. So, you know, while we've done all that, and while we see that technology and everything can occur rapidly, many systemic and cultural shifts take generations. And I believe that's what we've got to look at. And that's what we're going to, you know, got to hit on, is we can't predict exactly what will be, but we can create that vision for the future, because during the pandemic, there are lots of places that really shifted to care in place and taking care of patients at home and getting reimbursed for it because of the grant money, the CARES Act funding, and everything else that started happening, because we couldn't overwhelm the healthcare systems. So now let's talk a little bit about that and what will it look like?
So I find it kind of interesting that we're bringing up this with your comment. I wonder now, just after the last, 15 months now that we've gone through these dramatic changes, if we were to write this EMS 2050 agenda today, would it look different than having written this because of when it was written, going back to the 2015 to when it was published in 2019? Would this document look different even now?
I mean, I think it would to an extent, but I mean, I think this document points out that EMS systems, you know, so as it creates that vision, I think it would shift it a little bit and probably add more emphasis, and people would be more aware of it because they've seen some of the stuff already starting to come to fruition. But, you know, it says that the EMS systems of tomorrow have got to be people-centered. They've got to be process-oriented, which we've already done with STEMI, strokes, trauma care. Protocol-driven, where we're delivering care, value-based care, which we'll come back to maybe a little bit later. Integrated technology, which we're really seeing that start to explode. We've got to have policies and practices designed to provide the best, you know, possible outcomes that are tied back to the protocols and triage transport destinations, whether it's a mental health facility, treat at home, treat in place. Injury prevention, which we've really been lacking in the EMS realm. You know, fire has done a great job of fire education and fire prevention. We've not done a good job with injury prevention in EMS. And then the last thing that they really put out in there is further community partner collaboration with healthcare partners. So I think the document would look different, but only slightly.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you're reading through this, I mean, if anybody's ever read through this and been in EMS for even a little bit of time, you'd realize most of the stuff we're already, a lot of services are already doing this. But I do think, like, to David's point about COVID, how establishing the relationships in the community, integrating technology and stuff, that probably got expedited. But I just didn't see a lot of stuff in this agenda that was that scales to 2050, because I see it scaling in the next few years to be more robust and part of our training. But I see us going hopefully beyond that. I mean, it seems like, I guess as a critique of the 2050 agenda, is it seems like they hit the pinnacle of the expectations rather soon. And so I'm just like, well, what do we do with the remaining, you know, 20 years we have to go forward in the vision?
Well, I think on that, because if you remember a couple of years ago, we had a presentation on this at the conference we're getting ready to go to, Eric. I don't know if you remember that, but, you know, the conversation about it is that title, EMS Agenda 2050, is leading to say, hey, you know, this will take us out the next 30 years, 30 plus years in the EMS realm. And we all know that, you know, when you're taking a look at where we are, where we sit, what is done today is going to be different than 12 months. Even if we don't make substantial changes, there's things that are going to continue to grow. And it's like, oh, this is good for 2050, but really it's up to now. This document's printed. We should be getting back together and starting to take a look. Is this meeting our plans, or do we need to change? Now, I do think one of the key points that it has in here is that, you know, we need to make sure that our mindset is in adaptive or in adaptability and innovation, because, you know, one of the biggest things that I have an issue with is this is the way we've always done it. And, you know, I think that's one of those terms that we need to take and push off to the side, and because that's no longer viable. We're growing, we're seeing. And so if somebody brings something to you, let's take a look at it and see. It may be good, it may not be, but this profession is growing. And I think one of the things that does limit a lot of this, because I know that some of the individuals that were on the team to write this, we're almost kind of constrained that we can grow, but if we don't find, you know, the sustainable funding matrix to go with it, then how can we actually fund that growth? And then others are like, well, let's just jump off the cliff and make the parachute on the way down. And, you know, we see good things happen and some people make it and then some people don't. So
yeah, that's a good point. Cause like you're talking about the funding model. And I know that they approach that in the 2050 model. It's towards the end a little bit, but they really, and I understand this isn't to go into specifics. This is just far reaching and out there, and that's good to have the vision, but the funding model, not only on how we're compensated, but also how we're going to compensate those coming into our system. Cause right now everybody's facing EMS shortages, and I don't blame them. I mean, a lot of would be EMS workers are finding other vocations where they may make more lucrative salaries than they would in EMS. And in the 2050, it said adequate staffing for EMS exists across the nation. That is a far-reaching goal, because currently right now, at least in my area, it is not, we do not have adequate staffing at all.
Well,
go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say, you know, that's one of those things that we need to branch out when it comes to staffing. And a lot of this, you know, it's kind of interesting in here. It's got the clinician of the future, and that individual is going to differs significantly in 2050 than it is from now. And so my question is, when we take a look at the workforce that is in and around us, and I'm not going to speak for Eric or Bradley, so you can tell me whether it's true or not. EMS has got a significant shortage of people that are currently working in the field. How does that differ from the hospitals? How does that differ from the doctor's offices? How does that offer or differ from industry around us, from the industry to the service industry, restaurants, etc.? And so we need to find those out there that are excelling and find out how to implement some new changes that go along with that, and take a look at while these clinicians are significantly improving their knowledge, skills, and abilities, what is it that we need to continue to attract them to this profession and bring them in?
Well, you know, everybody says pay. Well, pay is a very poor intrinsic motivator, okay? You can pay somebody $50 an hour and they can still be miserable. But, you know, what we're facing is people who are not willing to work for low wages and poor working conditions. You know, one of the things that I just did some consulting with a local healthcare group that has – well, they're a fairly large healthcare system, but the big thing is they have a virtual hospital. So when you look at this, their virtual hospital, it takes this whole thing of what does people-centered EMS look like, and people receive comprehensive quality care in the place that is the most convenient and comfortable. Well, they're receiving care in the comfort of their home. They get admitted to the virtual hospital, a community care paramedic picks up their vehicle, picks up their stuff for their patients. They're working an 8 to 12 hour shift, depends on what their loop is for that day. They're seeing 6 to 10 patients. They go to that patient's home. They do basic education. Let's say that David's got, you know, congestive heart failure, and you've recently been discharged from the hospital. That hospital doesn't want you to come back. They want you to stay at home so they get paid for your stuff. And then they want to do follow-up visits, but you're not going to be compliant. You're not going to do all the stuff. You're not going to eat the right foods. So we're going to send somebody to see you. Would you like that? They come to see you. They go over your stuff. They get you your medicines. You know, Eric just had surgery, but he's got some complications and he's got some infection. Well, you could be at home and we'll send a paramedic to do your antibiotic infusion, follow your case, look at your wounds, and make sure you're not having any reactions. By the way, they're going to call you later that day to make sure everything's still good and arrange your next infusion over the next couple of days.
It's starting to sound a lot like a hybrid between a community care paramedic and like home health nursing at that point. And I think it's a good idea. I'm curious about, and I think that's probably where things should go. I know the hospitals want to prevent readmissions like the plague, especially given the amount of money that gets taken away from them when people are readmitted. And as long as we have strong legislation that keeps that going, that's fine. But what about the compensation for that? I think that's been the big gap, and hopefully that gets explored and resolved by 2050.
Well, I think one of the key points that you have to mention, since you brought it up there, Eric, is the difference between what is community paramedicine or mobile integrated healthcare, whichever terminology you want to use, and home health. Because a lot of these cases that are brought up, they're not cases that meet the need of home health. Home health is a very specific definition. They come in and we want to make sure that they thrive and survive as well, because we're not going to be the ones that are out there every, you know, I'm coming to see you every Monday, Wednesday, Friday for the next 12 weeks. It's going to be these, as Bradley's mentioned, a couple of things here and there. You've gotten discharged, you've gotten out of surgery. We're going to hit these couple points. And if it's something that goes beyond there, then we work with the doctor, the hospital, to say, okay, we've gone to where we have, they've not been readmitted, they do need home health, or they need to be readmitted to the hospital. And this is where, you know, it goes even a little bit more than that. And we bring in the primary care physicians, because the hospitals don't need to be the one that's managing all of that on a daily basis. They are going to, for whatever that case is, but then we bring in that primary care physician as well. And so with it's that conduit. So all of us are needed. It's just which niche is going to be key.
Yeah. And I mean, I will tell you, some of our local systems have lost paramedics to that healthcare group to do that. Yeah. And they're paying them well, because the patient's not being admitted to the hospital. They're getting reimbursed because they're doing virtual visits with the mid-level or physician. So they're getting those reimbursements.
Well, what's even more interesting, let's take a look. Let's come out of EMS altogether, just go into that hospital. So now not only are they doing the virtual hospitals, but I don't know if you've been around that a lot of these hospitals have got set up for consults that are nowhere even in the same state. So saw one stroke care in which the individual was brought in. They did all of the diagnostics there. It was shot to the neurologist, who came via a virtual presence device, had a big screen and was able to two-way communicate with the patient. He was going through this, that, or the other, and he was in Atlanta, Georgia. You know, so again, we're taking concepts. You know, the key is, hey, we had consults. We have to have a neurologist there. There's shortages of neurologists right now. So now we've got to get creative with that. You know, how we're going to get them involved. So we take some of those concepts and bring it to us. Is it putting people on QRVs to go out and do this? Is it, have them in the transport system and they're going out, they're the last ones called in to the transport side, and they do their rounds and then they're brought in. But does this change the schedule? Because I know that's one of the big things I've seen in your, Eric, here recently, a service posting for 2472s. There's a couple over in our region that are doing it and saying, hey, we're changing. We've seen some changing the 12-hour rotation. So kind of getting out of, again, this is the way we've always done it, and trying to transfer how it needs to be done.
I saw a thing. I thought it was kind of funny. It was on Facebook. I can't remember. I think it was the St. Fisher's. I can't remember. It was it was this this paramedicine education Facebook group, and they were talking about boomer medicine. And I love that term, because they're basically not only saying we need to not only knock the old philosophies down, we need to knock them out. Because if we're going to progress in our field and get the people that we want recruited in, we have to let them know we're doing progressive stuff, that we're not just saying, like you said, stuck in the mud. We're not doing the same things. Like we have paramedics that are now working in the clinical environment. And I noticed that this really wasn't even addressed in the EMS Agenda 2050, but a lot of paramedics, I'm sure, even during COVID, probably took up a lot more clinical hours, not working in an ambulance, but working in the hospitals to help cover down for missing RNs or whatever. And the Agenda 2050 presumes a lot of resources. There's a presumption there that we're going to have plenty of resources to do all this stuff. And without really addressing the challenge of that, of there not being enough specialists, of mid-level providers and high-level providers and acuity providers, I think it's going to fall short on meeting a lot of those expectations, especially if we're going to ignore the fact that, hey, paramedics may not even want to be in the ambulance anymore. They may decide they want to be in the clinical. We didn't even really adapt for that. Like, I work in an urgent care environment as needed per diem as a pediatric urgent care technician, but I'm working as a paramedic in there. I'm not working in EMS right now. I'm working in the clinical environment. And they didn't even really approach that, even though that's a resource that sometimes EMS can find themselves in.
Yeah. So let's dive a little bit more into the technology, move out of the clinical thing for just a second, even though transport is a clinical treatment. So imagine it's 2050. You're responding to a call and you're in a vehicle that was just made, an ambulance was just purchased. By that time, we have a lot of autonomous vehicles or vehicles that have driver assist. We've already seen that where vehicles slow down, they move over, they'll do everything to align with the roadway. We know that lights and sirens increase risk. We know that we have accidents. So what if we started putting something similar to like the Opticoms or preemption devices that capture red lights and turn them green for people that are going through them on ambulances that communicate with the other cars that are around? So we're responding to a call. You come up behind a car because they can't hear you. We no longer need the siren. That device tells another car, hey, the vehicle behind you gets traffic priority. You've got to pull over.
So this is going to take me in a couple of different directions. And so you're going to have to stop me and probably at some point in time. But I completely and totally agree with you on that. First point is they've done studies here recently that basically have said, because the argument has been for years, you know, turn down the radio so you can hear me. But the problem is new vehicles are designed that they're completely soundproof to be outside. And so a couple things with that. One, we know that anytime you drive over 60 miles an hour with a typical electric siren in an ambulance, you're actually outrunning the sound of your siren, and therefore you're not hearing it. Two, vehicles, you know, I commonly have, you know, books or podcasts going in my car, which I don't have very loud enough that I can hear it. And I've had ambulances, I pull up the federal queue on a fire truck, usually travels a little bit more and gets a little bit more attention, but it's usually seeing it before hearing it. So that to me would be completely a great point. If nothing else, it's got a little pop-up thing that says move to the right, emergency vehicle or something like that. And I think they can be set up to where they're received from multiple things, from, you know, wrecks up ahead. So it's like, you know, lane, you know, so Tennessee Department of Transportation has a big road signs that say, you know, wreck, lanes closed or whatever. Those can all be broadcast out into the community. The other part that I find about that is if you take a look at NHTSA's budget every year, there is a section of that that has autonomous vehicle development, which is substantially higher than is dedicated at the federal level to EMS. So if we take a look at it, you know, why are ambulances not equipped with some of those capabilities as well? Your hands have come off the steering wheel. They'll tell you, shake you, slow you down, move you back into lane, et cetera. There's a lot of things that could be done to help us out on that side as well. So I believe that's a very good point that even our equipment needs to be updated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why. Sorry, Eric. I'll tell you why ours is not updated. Because we have ambulances that are designed by paramedics and built by cabinet makers. Your car is built by an engineer built for human engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. We digressed.
But it's a completely a valid point. You know, you take a look at it, it's like, why are they? Well, because I can reach this, this, and this, and this. You know, but it's one of those conversations that we get into. There was a service that I followed believe it was in either Kansas or Missouri, but they got to the point that they questioned everything. How is there, it's like, if we want people to sit down, do patient care and be belted, why is it that we put, you know, the primary side for the patient over at the bedside and then put the radio around front? You require somebody to get up and move. Why do we not put it over here? And they, you know, they were like, obviously it's got to be something that's preventing that. And they basically went back, no, that's just where they want it. And so they're like, put it over here. Our guy doesn't have to move. He can do the radio report sitting right next to the patient. And so we've got to take a look and question that. So it's something simpler as that is, you want that person sitting there. They can be belted in. They don't have to move. Put the radio on the side next to the bench seat. Now they converted the bench seat into a captain's chair, and there's a couple other things there. But, you know, why haven't we done that?
I think it'd be interesting if there was a Tesla model for ambulances. And I don't think it's too much to ask that we have the same technology that is empowering other industries. I mean, the trucking industry has autonomous trucking that they're trying out. The military has been doing it for years. And the other thing, and speaking of the military, being in the National Guard, I remember we had stuff that were hand-me-downs from the 70s and 80s and 90s. And I'm afraid EMS is going to end up in that same junction if we don't actually try to keep pace with the technology going into 2050. But again, I'm sure directors who are listening to this could be like, yeah, dude, but how? Like, hopefully we can get the money and the resources to do something like that, because like you said, it's going to empower us.
Let's take a look at this. And Bradley started this with a few questions at the beginning. I'm going to toss one out here. How much of the last flight that you took was actually controlled by one of those individuals in the cockpit? On average, 7 minutes.
Yep.
And it's usually only having to do with the taxiing and the takeoff, but they will actually, there's reports that are out there that basically, especially if it's in a significant weather landing, let the aircraft do it. You're landing by autopilot. And yet, you know, we're not willing. So the question is, Pierce has actually recently come out with an electric fire engine. That's going to be interesting to see. I haven't seen anything much besides the kind of the initial, you know, hey, we've got an electric vehicle, and you'll have a lot of questions obviously coming, from the fireside. You know, how does it pump? How does it? But obviously, it's got to meet those specifications, and that's the direction it's heading. So, Eric, you made mention earlier, what about a Tesla model? Has any of us ever gone to a Tesla or one of the engineering firms and said, hey, this is what we have. Let me tell you what we do. Have you ride along with us. Design us an automobile.
I mean, they're going to space. I don't see why devoting resources, and they'll probably find some great way to save money and to make it to not only make it affordable for everybody, but also make it to where they can make a profit off of it as well. But yeah, I mean, that goes back to the whole, you're not doing what you always done. Just don't keep going to the same manufacturers and saying, hey, could you build us another box?
Well, I look at it like this, you know, and I do some different, you know, business investments and things here and there. You know, look at what we need, design what we need, but invest in the lowest thing. If we take the human capital that we have, which is our most precious asset, and we invest in that, and then we let them provide the clinical care and automate what we can, that's what we need to do.
Think about it. You know, how many times do you go into the emergency department that you only have one person as part of your emergency care team? You're going to have one coming in and taking vitals and stuff like that. But it's, you know, you've got the nurse, you've got the physician, you've got a respiratory therapist or a X-ray technician, a radiologist. You know, there's there's a team that's behind that. And so right now we take a look and you have the provider that's in the back, whatever level that's going to be for you. And then the driver, and not sliding that individual, but they're spending the majority of their time driving. So I'll post today is like, how do you split up that responsibility? And you know, I had that conversation, you know, if it's a dual paramedic truck, we took every other call. But I did some of the driving for the others because I wanted them in the back as much as I could. But, you know, if we could put all of those hands on the patient and knew we were going to get there. And then I know everybody's going to say, if you take a look at the amount of accidents that occur, but if you take a look at the amount of accidents that occur when it comes to autonomous vehicles, it's usually that somebody that's behind the driver's wheel that doesn't think the autonomous side is going to do it correctly and they overtake it.
Yep.
So, but I'm going to turn this another direction and continue to push, because I think the one thing that this 2050 does is kind of take a look at a lot of the things, as you said, kind of make it patient centric, but also provider, you know, the safety of our provider. And one of the things that it's kind of talking about is making it inherently safe and effective. And one of the things we take a look at is how many of our providers get hurt on an annual basis. And, you know, while everybody thinks that those injuries occur solely because of lifting a overweight patient on our stretchers, that's not necessarily the case. There's a lot of different things that build up to that. But this same service that I was talking about earlier started to the point, Bradley, what is in your all's first in bag and how much does it weigh?
I'm going to be blunt. Too damn much. No, too damn much.
So how did we get to what is in that first in bag? Oh, we needed one of these. We needed one of those. So we keep putting. And so this, you know, you take a look at, now you've got somebody that's twisting and moving with this odd object that they don't train their fitness wise with, that's 40, 50, 60 plus pounds. And then we say, oh, you need to have a suction device with it. You need to have, and then you need to have the 30 pound cardiac monitor, the, you know, there's any number of things. And so even when we had Chief Boothley on here the other day, he started getting to the conversations like, you know, take what you need. And so as we take a look at this, I think to me, it opens up the conversation and says, hey, what are we taking in? Is it necessary? So do we need to sit down with our EMS physician and a team? And for me, if I'm a leader, it's not necessarily having the director and the deputy director and the training officer. It's having paramedic Eric, paramedic Bradley, paramedic, you know, such and such. Hey, you all come up. What needs to be in this first hand bag? Let's take it to our medical director and see if he thinks that these things can be removed and try to get that thing down to 15 to 20 pounds or less.
Well, I mean, the other, you know, you're talking about that. Some people want to take in, you know, everything in the back of the truck and the kitchen sink. I need a couple of things. One, I assume they called. They need to go to the hospital. So I take my stretcher, some basic things. If it is a cardiac arrest and I'm the first arriving unit, I don't need anything if I've got a driver. Somebody's got to go inside and relieve the person that hopefully is doing CPR. I'm not going to grab anything. I'm going straight into the house, do that. My partner can grab the monitor. Because of high quality CPR and early defibrillation. That's it. We can worry about the airway when the other people get there.
And that's where, you know, if we want to simply go back to National Registry skill sheets, that's one of the reasons why it's so high. If we don't know that we're on a cardiac arrest, as soon as we find out, we get the additional care there. But we need to get those hands on the chest and pumping and get the defibrillation as quickly as possible. And that's the thinking that we need to get into now, because again, you know, we put in there. And the other thing is when you take a look at this first in bag, that's 60 pounds. If you know where everything is, it still takes you some time to get to all of those, but it goes back to the fact that, you know, in years past, we gave oxygen to everybody. What's it going to hurt? 15 liters by non-rebreather, we're just going to give it. So we have to have that O2 cylinder in there. We everybody has two adult, two pediatric nasal cannulas, two pediatric non-rebreathers, two adult non-rebreathers, a bag valve mask, all this other stuff. And so why? You know, if we're going to a mass casualty, that's great. But if I'm going to a mass casualty, my first in truck is my triage, and they're not taking anything with them. It's them, their triage tags, and they're going out. So what does EMS 2050, what does EMS in 2050, and this is where we'll kind of go for our wrap up. What does EMS look like in the year 2050?
Well, other than patient centered, and I think one of the things you just said is inherently safe and effective. I think it will need to be integrated and seamless within the healthcare system, partnered with public health, which we did great during the pandemic, and that we've just got to keep that momentum going. I think our providers will be reliable and prepared. I think it should be socially equitable, sustainable, and efficient.
I might also add that who we are is streamlined. I do think there will come a day where there will be no more EMT, advanced EMT. I think it's just going to be a paramedic at some point. I think it should be. I mean, if they were to make me the czar of EMS, they said, whatever you want, get rid of pretty much all the other levels and just make paramedic into the level, and then have different levels off of that paramedic level. Like you can, just like an RN, like you can go get an associate's degree in RN, but you can also be a BSN, MSN, all that stuff. But this way our training is streamlined because it talks about the federal government, academic institutions and EMS organizations and services prioritizing funding EMS research that promotes more effective and safer patient care. You can't do that with people with just high school degrees. I'm sorry, you can't. 2050 is going to look a lot different for the providers in the future. And that means that, and again, this isn't very popular, again, amongst EMS directors, but that also means we're probably going to be degreed at that point.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have to be adaptable and innovative as we do that.
I think it's one of the call-out boxes in the 2050 document on page 20. I think it's absolutely integral into the conversation. As EMS becomes more integrated in the broader healthcare delivery model, and that really is the way that it needs to be. And I know some hospitals are already starting to do this. You know, used to, you saw all of their statistics being door to balloon time, door to TPA, door to stent, door to this, door to, you know, and they realized that the incident doesn't occur at their front door. The incident occurs elsewhere. And so if it takes them 30 minutes to get from where they are to that hospital, and there's absolutely no care that is provided, then that door to whatever time is irrelevant because there's been significant issues that occurred. But if they're brought in by an EMS service, they know that X amount of care has been delivered, so that 30 minutes is a lot different. And so they're going from time of injury to this and starting to count those times. And to me, that means an investment or a partnership with those entities to say, all right, you want us to be able to do this for you, which is one of the things makes our clinical so great when they go out and talk to, or they're in one of our cath labs. They know what those cardiologists that are looking for. And it's like, hey, this is the data points. You know, don't be afraid to call that STEMI alert at 3 o'clock in the morning. We may be at home in bed, but I would much rather get it now than be 20 minutes later and this patient comes off. So it's actually getting that investment, that partnership from those hospitals to say, hey, while you don't go past the doors, you know, my ambulance doesn't say XYZ hospital, it says XYZ ambulance service, you are a part of this patient care. And so we're going to work with you before, but we're also, like Bradley said, we're going to make sure on the end that information gets back to you And we can go back and say, hey, Eric and Bradley, you just transported this patient. The outcome was good. But they said if you would have been able to do this or this or identify this, and we could work with that on training, then that advanced care continues to work its way back. So we've definitely hit a lot of hot button topics throughout this episode today. And so we certainly want each one of your all's feedback on EMS Agenda 2050, not only the document, but a lot of the things that we talked about. What does EMS 2050 look like to each of you? That's a key, because while you got three old dudes here, even though we're not quite as old as Bradley, you notice that Eric, he knew all of those key things.
Oh, that were he happening did. Back yes, he sure did. Yeah.
Back there, when we were still in those single digits, and he was. But it's really each one of you all that's got the agenda for the future. You all are going to be the ones that are putting it out there. So make sure and, hit us up on some of our social media, our website. Eric's in the middle of redeveloping that and putting mm-hmm. that out there. We're going to be getting together. We'll talk about some of this stuff just this coming week as well. So make sure to go by and visit our website at emshandoff.com. Go by our Facebook group, which is one of our most active places you see us posting on a regular basis. But don't forget to go by and see Jim's as well, all of our podcast partners and their information, and go out and buy our clothing. We'd love to see your pictures out there in the EMS handoff gear by the Pursue Company. So make sure to go to the Pursue Company, pursueco.com, and look for the EMS handoff gear. So for my co-host, Eric McCullough and Bradley Dean, this is David. Take care, stay safe, and always remember the value of your EMS handoff.